welcome to Married to Movies. Industry insiders John Russell and Tracy Kring live and work happily in cinematrimony. They're sharing behind-the-scenes adventures of writing, producing, and appreciating films.
Good morning, babe.
Good morning, babe. How you doing?
Good. This is so poor.
What's like, so poor?
That I'm shaking my salt from an actual salt can. I just feel like camping and I'm pouring salt straight from the can.
So I have a theory what happened here. Usually the tomatoes would have been cut and then I would be getting my percentage of tomatoes.
Yeah.
But because we're in the middle of the show here and you've got all those tomatoes over there.
I'm not keeping
you
them.
You weren't planning on giving me
That's
any tomatoes.
That's not true, but you are cutting into my tomatoes.
I'm cutting into your tomatoes?
You've started to like tomato.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I insist on having a tomato every morning.
Yes.
You're liking them, so right. You're taking half of my tomato, where not, I used to get a whole tomato.
Okay, folks, look at the camera. That was not half of the tomatoes.
You were... At a networking event, and it cracked me up because
okay,
you were talking to someone, and they said that they quoted Tolstoy.
Mm-hmm. They did.
When you told me, I said, I don't understand that quote.
Right.
And also, like, did Tolstoy say that?
He said that Tolstoy was talking to this other dude. I don't know if he meant the other dude or if he meant Tolstoy, but he brought up Tolstoy because we were referring to the fact of how much more difficult it is to write a short film than it is to write a feature film.
I totally agree.
Right. And he said, let's see if I can get my Ukrainian
you
accent.
Can't.
I can get the limit.
I will quote Tolstoy.
Please, this is like really racist.
It's not racist.
Yeah, I feel like you're doing it in a racist way.
Okay, if you're not talking about race, if you're talking about ethnicity.
You said...
Is it the same thing?
Yeah,
I don't think it's racist if you're talking about ethnicity.
Sure it is.
A region of the world.
I really don't care.
He said that the quote was, I write because I don't want to think. That it was easier to just create something than to boil it down to its, you know, most potent effort.
I can't find any proof that Tolstoy said that.
I don't think Tolstoy said it.
Do you think people go around and they just, like, say they're quoting someone when they're just making shit up?
I think it's much more likely that I'm wrong.
Oh.
And that they're...
That you got the quote wrong?
No, I did not get the quote wrong. Do not accuse me of that. I did not get the quote wrong. I might have got the attribution wrong of the quote. We started 5 new series and...
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. We want to give you our rundown.
I question, like, being able to binge something. I don't know if that model is sustainable.
They do it in several ways now. They do them episode by episode, okay? Mm-hmm. Or they do, they open with, like, 2 or 3 episodes.
If they give me, like, 2 episodes and then I have to start watching it episode by episode,
mm-hmm.
I may peace out.
Let's start with the one that only had 1 episode. That was The Sympathizer.
Mm-hmm.
Which
was
is...
That only- 1 episode?
Yeah, that was only 1 episode. Yeah.
Wow. I feel like I watched 5 of that.
Well, that's good.
Episode was really cram-packed.
It really was. It really was. For those of you who don't know, it's... should we say that each time for those of you who don't know?
Well, why don't you just say... Not say for those of you who don't know. And just say what it is they don't know.
Okay. Sounds good. You could have said that in a little bit of a nicer way.
Am I being mean? I'm in a bad mood today.
You're in a bad mood today?
Yeah, I'm
then
in a bad
mood. Then why are we doing
mood?
A podcast? I'm going to die.
It's important to admit that, right? I'm in a bad mood.
It's like Jeffrey Dahmer saying, I'm hungry today. You know, it doesn't help you.
Well, but why am I in a bad mood is the question. Like, what's causing... this unsettled feeling, you know, what's causing this unease in my being?
Is that what a bad mood is?
Do you not know what a bad mood is?
I think, well.
You have bad moods?
Yeah. I mean, my bad moods are usually based on, like, personal frustration, you know, with myself or with my life. I don't get up in a bad mood. Unless it's like, having a headache or, you know. Or a tummy ache or something.
I was on a call yesterday and I...
Oh, is that what put you in the bad mood?
Well, I felt like, you know, when people kind of like ask you questions, but it's more like they're aggressively asking you questions to trap you in their point of view.
Okay, so there's an agenda behind the question is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to, and like the situation, you know, the question I was asked, I really didn't know what else I could have done.
Right.
And so I was like, I really don't know what else I could have done.
So you felt like you were being manipulated and that put you in a bad mood?
It's that someone's forcing me into something. And I'm like, well, was I resisting that because... I am covering up something? Like, am I covering up I was wrong or I feel like I was wrong? What am I covering up? You know? And like, I don't know. I haven't quite worked it out yet, but
I see, I feel like that is a totally slippery slope. This idea that I feel something negative about what someone else has done. And my immediate answer to that is, what have I done wrong to create my own negativity?
No, I mean, that's you feel that way. You tell me that often. And maybe that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Maybe the problem is, instead of saying, you know, they were very aggressive and they really wanted to trap me in what they wanted me to be.
Right.
And I'm not that.
Right.
And that person is an asshole and they can suck my wiener.
Thank you. Exactly. More of that. I want to hear you say,
I have no wieners.
Suck my wiener more.
Well, I have a package of Aldi weenies in the fridge. Yeah, that's so true. That's what I'm talking about.
Pretty good for 99 cents, folks.
I'm not masculine. I'm not trying to make masculine my situation.
I understand.
As a feminist, I have a package of hot dogs. And thank you for walking me through that because I feel better.
Oh, holy shit. That is amazing. What? You feel better? I wasn't even trying to make you feel better. I was just asking questions. Oh my God. This is great. All right. Anyway. Wait. Oh, what are you doing? Don't go off on the sillies. We've got a show to do.
Are you going to hang a shingle now?
Yes. That's right. I'm like Lucy with her, like, you know, psychiatry advice for Nicole or whatever.
Right.
I think my favorite part of that is that whenever somebody drops the nickel in for Lucy, all she does is just like shake it and talk about how awesome the sound of the nickel is and doesn't actually give any advice.
She's just really happy to make the money.
The sympathizer.
Right.
It stars...
Super interesting period of time because I don't think we know anything about...
Right after, as the Vietnam War is ending in 1975, which is something that not everybody... I mean, it's crazy when you think of the fact that the Vietnam War ended in 1975.
That's the year I was born.
I mean, it's crazy when you think about that. And from the perspective of...
Does it feel like it should be longer ago?
No. To me, Vietnam is all, you know, it's like, you know, 1969, 1970, 1971.
Oh, that it lasted
that it lasted another 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, that we were basically, like, guys in Vietnam, instead of listening to Creedence Clearwater Revival, they were listening to Donna Summer. Okay.
Oh, the disco era.
Yes, it got into disco, folks.
You know, that
how crazy is that? Wild Cherry was playing.
I have to say, if I were out in some other country, in like some, you know, wet field in the rain.
Rice paddy.
Well, I didn't want to be racist.
It's not racist. They have rice paddies. They make rice.
It's a stereotype.
There's nothing racist about it.
They also make rice in South Carolina. They also make lots of rice other places.
Okay.
So if I'm out there fighting for my country
in
some other country.
Yes.
Shooting people.
Yes.
And people back in my country are at a disco. I don't know. I'd be furious.
Oh, gosh, yes.
I'd just be like, what the hell are you dancing over? What the hell? Like, if I had to listen to the Bee Gees, I would be furious.
That's true. You never see a Vietnam movie with the Bee Gees playing as they're trouncing through the jungle. I don't think
No, it's always like, trouncing? You know, the watchtower. Oh, the watchtower, you know, right, like exactly. That kind of thing. It's like the Doors. It's like the 60s music.
Oh, absolutely. Always. Right. I actually remember being in my room, jumping around, dancing to Disco Duck, listening to Rick Dees. And
the weekly top 40.
Yes. Very good. Very good. I used to love that.
That's one of those words that I can't help but finish.
When do you say Rick Dees?
Yeah. And the weekly top 40.
The Sympathizer. Oh my God. Are we ever going to get through these?
No, we're not. We're not.
Okay.
The Sympathizer was great.
It was great. It has really one major star that everybody would know, which is Robert Downey Jr. But he's playing like almost like a Peter Sellers kind of part.
He is.
Yes.
And maybe of modern actors, he is the closest thing we have to Peter Sellers.
Well,
is that possible?
Can you imagine Peter Sellers as Iron Man?
Yeah.
No, I could not. I could not imagine that at all.
No, but I do love Peter Sellers.
It is a book written by an Asian American writer. I don't know which one.
When I was watching it, I was just like, this can't have been made by like someone in the U.S. We just don't know this history. Like, that's such a deep dive into the culture and the climate and espionage. I was like, okay, good. It was a book written by somebody who, like, would get it.
Right. And it's a story of basically a double agent. He is working for the CIA, but at the same time, he's working for the North Vietnamese.
I just want to throw in there, man, what in the fuck has the CIA been up to this whole time?
Oh, you know.
I was looking at declassified documents from the CIA. Mm-hmm. What in the hell have they been doing? Is anybody reading these declassified documents?
Apparently they're not. The Sympathizer is created and directed by Park Chan-wook, I think is his name. He's like the one who did Old Boy and the Vengeance trilogy.
The original Old Boy.
Yeah, the original. Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm not talking about remake. The Josh Brolin
no,
one.
No.
We don't talk about that.
No. We do not talk. Just like Bruno, we do not talk about the new Old Boy. Don't Speak. You remember that horror movie? It was like the Dutch one where the family went and they met the other family on vacation.
Uh-huh.
Well, they have made an American remake of that.
They did the same with Force Majeure.
Right.
Force Majeure.
Which was terrible. And then they had Will Ferrell
and Julian Louis Dreyfus.
Terrible remake. Completely missed the point.
You know what really bothers me about remakes is like, how can you so not get what made a movie work?
Absolutely.
And remake it.
What they're doing is they're shaving off the sharp edges. Don't Speak will work as an Americanized version. It will. It will be scary. It will have all of that uncomfortableness.
Maybe.
It won't have as much of
that
uncomfortableness.
I don't know if you could be that uncomfortable. My God. Ooh, that was uncomfortable.
Okay. Speaking of that, we're going to have to talk about Baby Reindeer.
Oh, I'm not uncomfortable about that at all. You are.
I am so uncomfortable. I am so uncomfortable with this new Netflix series, Baby Reindeer. I'm not watching it. I can't watch it. I've peaced out on this thing.
You said after one episode,
it's great. It's great. It's incredibly well done. It's very, very impressive. The idea feels way too close to home for me. But everybody in it is kind of awful. You know, and everything that they're doing is dumb in terms of the way that they're handling the situation. And I don't handle that well.
So when you say that it's too close to home for you.
Yes.
How do you mean?
Because I have known crazy people in my life. Crazy people.
Gotcha.
People that in the wrong circumstances, in front of the wrong people, would have been institutionalized.
Okay.
And that's really what a Baby Reindeer is about. is an absolutely insane stalker woman mm-hmm. who fixates on this one very interesting, strange, very complex bartender. Someone's humor is really telling them what they really feel, whether it be sexual or
through jokes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That, folks, if you are ever made uncomfortable by a joke, that's because there was truth in it.
Well, they meant to say it to your face and they made it a joke.
Exactly. So it feels so sometimes people are very mean in their jokes.
Yeah.
Or very sexual. Or very, you know, and because they can't actually be truthful with you, they're going to couch it. And, I was just kidding. That was a joke. What? You can't take a joke? Incredibly impressive. Just not my bag. Not my thing.
Well, I'm loving it.
Mm-hmm.
I get made uncomfortable by things, certainly.
Right.
But the directions that this show has gone, I thought I was getting one kind of thing, and every single episode, I'm getting a different kind of thing about that.
Well, what I appreciate about the show is that it is not just villainizing her. Yes, she is crazy, and yes, she is dangerous.
He's participating.
He is engaging this.
Yeah, I mean, what she's doing is like way over the top and yes. not deserved. But he is engaging, and his new girlfriend says, like, you know, I think you love the drama of it,
right?
You know,
you love the idea of being loved so that you don't have to love.
The crap that has happened to him when you get into his backstory is crazy mm-hmm. and awful,
right?
You know, and that it's like the first episode's kind of like it's going to be a comedy almost.
Well, I think it is. I mean,
not one episode. It is not a comedy.
Well,
but mixing comedy with.
Well, the fact that he's trying to be a comedian, that's his dream. And that as things progress, he actually gets better at being a comedian.
Yeah, he does. But his life gets much worse.
Right. Yes, for Baby Reindeer for Tracy. And yes, for me, if you can handle it, and I personally can't handle it.
Yeah, you don't like being uncomfortable.
Now, what I really loved was Fallout.
I really don't love Fallout.
Fallout was so much fun. I never played the video game before.
No.
Really don't
we
have...
We don't do that.
No, we don't do that. And I really have no interest in playing the video game, even though I think the show does a really great job of me trying to figure out what would the video game even be? Because the story for this thing is... what the whole thing is about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when we watched The Last of Us, I could say, okay, this is a video game. This reminds me of like Silent Hill, you know?
Yeah.
Where you're like, okay, going from here, and then you find the map, and then you go here, and then you
fight. Maybe it has like a bunch of like connective stories.
Yeah, exactly. But Fallout to me is just great sci-fi, and it was... I really love the idea of sort of the 1950s aesthetic, but done in a steampunk way.
Yeah,
done
in technology in 1950.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. But actually, the technology is probably more like, you know, 2100 in 1950. And then right. it goes up, you know, from
but
there.
But the design is kind of 1950.
The design, the music is amazing in it. Basically, once you get onto the surface of Fallout, it's a Western. You know, even the ghoul, the one played by Scoggins.
It's like Westworld.
Yeah, exactly. He is, you know, he is like the, you know, the Dark Rider. Right, going through. And the music they found was not only 1950s, but it all has a sort of a Western vibe. Yes, it does. Like the ink spots and things like that.
Interesting.
And...
probably lesser known.
Oh, very much lesser known.
Are we sure it's period music?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all period music. And it's like a song like Don't Fence Me In or things like that. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was just that aesthetic when sort of the music was sort of meeting what everybody was watching in the 50s, mm-hmm. which was, you know, Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's really, really amazing. I really enjoyed the show. I've binged the whole thing. I even liked Kyle MacLachlan, and I'm usually pretty anti Kyle MacLachlan in most things.
He's a wild card.
He is. Yes, he very much is a wild card. Didn't David Lynch really embrace the 50s aesthetic in most of the things that he did?
Yeah. He was like, it's just striking me that Lynch, let's say, would be making stuff in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And his aesthetic would be the 50s.
Right.
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 But like our generation, our aesthetic is like the 70s.
Right. Right. And some of the 80s too.
Yeah. And the 80s.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. It's just strange whenever you're writing a script, like what year aesthetic, you know, are you going for? And
what year aesthetic is Origian?
Well, futuristic.
But how far in the future?
But I would say more like the 90s futurism.
Mm.
You know how like cars got bubbly?
Yeah.
They got like, you know, they stopped being blocky and they got more bubbly.
Right.
Like Saturns and, you know, I mean, it was just we had absolutely no space race at that point.
Right.
But there was kind of a spacey vibe.
Well, let's get into that spacey vibe.
Oh my God, that was the transition. I still had so many things I wanted to talk about.
We don't have time.
Ian Solange's dream. Ian Solange is dreaming of standing on the top of a mountain. He's looking through a telescope, but he needn't bother because a spiral galaxy fills the sky with so much brilliance that he can practically touch the nebula. He looks over and there's a bonfire in front of him that erupts. He stands in the front of the inferno and it recedes and becomes Emmeline. She's in a white robe. Behind her is an altar. She walks over to take Ian's hand, leading him to the altar. She lays down and reaches up to him. She has a bloody knife in her hand. He doesn't want to take it from her, so she smiles and stabs herself with it. Her blood glows, and the altar is engulfed in an otherworldly spectral light that blinds him. Ian wakes up in his room.
Interior. Ian Solange's private quarters. Night. Ian opens his eyes and sits up in bed. He grabs a remote. Soothing sounds fill the room. He lays back down and closes his eyes.
Interior, Origian Garden Day. Each student has their own plot of land inside the greenhouse. Emmeline's is lush and full of life. Matthew looks up from his plot a couple of rows down and gingerly walks over to Emmeline, who's caressing a zucchini blossom. He has bandages over his ears.
Matthew, your food looks beautiful.
Emmeline, thank you. It took some practice. I didn't have a green thumb, I can assure you that.
I still don't have one. I seem to have all my issues with legumes.
I can show you if you like. What happened to your ears?
I'm fine. The doctors did some tests and figured out that I had a problem in my inner ear that was affecting me.
Your ear was making you vomit? Oh, otoliths.
Yeah, the little pebbles. They did surgery and gave me this little implant. I have a magnetic key so I can make adjustments if I start to feel sick. And when the bandages come off, I'll show you. It's right under the skin.
That means you're part robot now.
Yeah.
Does it hurt?
Only when I hear. Joke.
I sometimes have trouble with those.
I don't think it was funny. I just wanted to come over and thank you for calming me down with the blood.
Oh, you're welcome.
See you later.
Me too. I mean, sure.
Matthew goes back over to his less lush plot of greenery. Interior, white car day. The Ride family are being driven to see Emmeline for the last time before she leaves Earth for good. They are sullen, except for Bettina, who is annoying her mother, showing pictures on her device.
Grace, read the room, Bettina. I'm not in the mood right now. Bettina, I can't help it.
Jeff, get it out of your system. We're not bringing it up there.
Bettina, which is bullshit. Grace, can't we just focus on your sister for the next couple of hours and then you can post? We all know that's what's killing you. Bettina, that's uncalled for. I happen to believe in honesty, and I think she would be happy to know we were going to be successful and safe. It's all thanks to Emmy we have this opportunity anyway.
Jeff, we don't need to replay the entire courtroom drama. Agree to disagree and keep it to yourself. The car is nearing Origian headquarters. There are protesters outside the security gates. They are protesting Origian's oligarchy and Project Ascension.
Grace, these people don't understand the sacrifices being made to help them. Our kids are heroes. We should be considered Gold Star families.
The protesters are moved back by security guards and the car goes through the gates into the picturesque campus.
We were watching a show last night that we've really gotten into, Ripley. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm not that keen on watching black and white. And I could have sworn it wasn't black and white in my memory, but you pointed out it's all black and white, but I could have sworn it was in color.
That was one of the butts. Yeah.
No, they had butts, but...
But
That is a show that has barely any dialogue for a whole episode at a time.
Yeah.
And like, I'm squeamed out. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so tense.
That show has some of the most beautiful cinematography I've seen in so long. It's like.
And sound design.
Oh, and there was a, okay.
Because there's no talking.
Look, I follow Paul Schrader on Facebook, and he talked about the fact that so much of the show is set up as static shots with no dolly movement, with no handheld.
Yeah.
They're like paintings.
Very little handheld.
And they are, and to me, it's one of the first, I think, something that emulates Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
You know, just the way that the shots are set up to be gorgeous. And that's the whole point, is that whatever we're going to do, it's going to be about how beautiful the shot is.
Well, I mean, you have opportunities. Like, you know, you have to shoot a close-up. It's not going to look like a painting, mm-hmm. you know? It's going to look like a zoom-in on a painting, maybe, if you're lucky.
Right.
But, like, yeah, those wide shots, you know, that's your
and opportunity. He's a huge Caravaggio fan.
Obviously, because in the show, the character is obsessed with Caravaggio,
right,
too.
Right, exactly.
Which I am, too. Like, he's basically the first filmmaker ever.
Right. And the dark and the light and the mix. But the thing about that show is it really taps into the chaos of dealing with killing somebody. Because every time he kills somebody.
It's like, but like, he kills people and like there's people nearby and or his door's open and he's killing people or like.
Or when he falls out of the boat.
Yeah, it's just like calamities happening. But I'm just I
don't remember that from The Talented Mr. Ripley. Like, did that lean into that as much?
I feel like I need to rewatch The Talented Mr. Mm-hmm. Ripley. And honestly, like, this character who's playing
Andrew Wood,
Freddy.
Oh, playing Freddy, yes.
Wasn't Philip Seymour Hoffman Freddy in the original?
Yes.
But the character here is like
Elliot Sumner.
It's Sting's protege.
Yes. Yeah. Not protege, progeny.
Progeny.
Yes. Oh. Sting's progeny. That is the way that they are described. They do not identify with gender, but they are. Fantastic and very, they make you very uncomfortable.
Whenever they're questioning the character, you're just like, oh mm-hmm. God, because anytime the character, you know, of Ripley is questioned,
mm-hmm.
you're just like on the edge of your seat. Are they going to figure this out?
Right. Right.
Oh my God. That
because you're living with the villain.
Yeah. And you're rooting for him.
You are the villain as the audience.
Yeah.
Because the villain is the only one to hold on. Yeah, you don't want to get caught.
And every time, I'm just like, how is he going to get caught? He's going to get caught this time. Yeah, and I'm just like, ooh, there's the thing.
Dragging the body down the stairs in the middle of the night.
Yeah, just, oh my God. And like the way.
And then going back.
Oh my God. I'm just like.
It is that same sort of cringe that I have with Baby Reindeer.
But see, this doesn't bother you.
No. This is really entertaining to me.
The tension of like, oh, I'm about to get caught. That I have a problem with that. That makes me really uncomfortable. Right. Where I can't hardly watch it.
Right.
But that doesn't make you uncomfortable. But I can watch Baby Reindeer and you can't. It's like
yes,
fat and lean.
Right. And together they licked the plate clean.
I did notice something cruising around on Disney Plus.
Yes.
I was looking, and I just pulled it up, and like I chose the profile of my little 6-year-old nephew. So I clicked on his profile. All of these very inappropriate shows showed up.
Yes.
I was just like, wait, hold on. Why are these on a 6-year-old's profile on Disney Plus?
Because he loves Killing Eve.
No, because Disney Plus has merged with Hulu.
Exactly.
And I just want to point out, all of these streamers.
Yes.
All these streamers, and you called it.
I did.
Like last year, yes. You called it. You said, what's happening is all these streamers will eventually combine back together and become cable again.
Yes. We're going to create a new thing called
Cable. And one of the things that Disney was saying they wanted to do, which you see on Pluto, which you see on Plex or other things.
Not wanted to do. They already Peacock, have done it. Yeah.
Peacock.
Yeah.
They're just creating live channels.
New channels. Exactly.
But it's a live scrolling show where you can like, oh, look, just like on the old TV guide.
It'll be like,
it'll be like that.
The Marvel Channel.
Gilligan's Island.
It'll be the Marvel Channel will be
playing. They just created channels again.
Ant-Man. And then after that will be Civil War. Okay. And then
the people who own these corporations, like, did you ever really walk this freaking idea through?
Here's what I think.
You destroyed something.
Well,
you destroyed something to create something. To just go back to the past.
And they knew that.
You think they knew that?
Yes, of course they knew that. Because what they wanted to do was basically there was this thing called cable TV that everybody had hundreds and thousands of channels.
Did they just want to cut them out?
Yeah, and the only way to get people to these
These big broadcasters out.
Right, to cut them out was basically to create free heroin for a while. Where people weren't having to pay anything to watch these streamers or pay very, very little. Mm-hmm. But eventually, it was not a sustainable model. You have to have advertisers.
There's a very evil mastermind behind that.
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't believe in the Illuminati. I don't think we're smart enough to have an Illuminati.
Well, if you look in retrospect at how they've manipulated this so that they basically sucking up all of the entertainment back into one conglomeration.
Sure.
And Disney has certainly come out on the top in this.
Well,
or across the board.
Yeah, Disney and Netflix. Yeah.
How long is it going to be before Netflix has to sell to Disney?
Yeah.
How long is it going
to
be?
Or Disney sells to Netflix. I don't know which one.
No, I don't think so.
You know, who will be the last bear in the cave?
Netflix can't produce films at the rate and scope of Disney. They just have too much damn money.
I don't know. I know they've been trying to sell Paramount.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Paramount had already sucked up Discovery and TLC.
Right. But the thing about the thing that is holding people down from buying Paramount is that Paramount owns all of these cable channels.
Right.
And those are not really, they don't have a lot of value. You know, MTV and Comedy Central and Nickelodeon, those don't have value necessarily too. So people don't want to buy Paramount because they don't want the cable channels.
Oh, and Paramount's got to have the cable channels attached because they're all one thing now.
That's the whole thing is that the lady who owns Paramount doesn't want to break it up into its television arm, its movie arm, its, you know, cable arm, all of that.
It's so screwed up.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's so screwed up. And I mean, honestly, as the audience members, we're benefiting. We are. We have access to pretty much anything we could want at all times.
Yeah, but we're continually being charged more.
Yeah. This is our next to last show before our mid-season break.
We have a mid-season break, folks.
Yeah.
This will be our 15th show next week. Yes.
This is 14. Next week will be 15. And then we're going to take a break for 6 to 8 weeks.
A little break.
Yeah, we'll still be posting some social media and, you know, that'll be 45 podcasts we've done.
That's right. We will be back, folks. No need to commit harikiri, anything like that, or sakuku, or whatever it's called. Well,
and you can just re-listen to or re-watch episodes you might have missed.
That's right.
And then we'll come back with
the rest of Origin.
The last 15 episodes of season 2.
Right.
Which is kind of cool because we get some time off in the summer and we get time off at the holidays.
Right.
And that's kind of our year.
Yeah.
Of podcasting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's 52 weeks in a year and we do 30 episodes.
And I think we've heard probably from more folks than we've ever heard from. Just like, oh, we will listen to the show. Oh, you guys are really funny.
Well, I thought it was cool when you were like at a networking event in the city and somebody was like, oh yeah, I listen to your podcast.
Who knows, man?
I mean, that, you know, we're trying.
Yes. So
consistency.
Next week will be the halfway point of season two. So be there or be square.
That was not a good ender.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's hard not to get romantic about movies. Thanks for listening to Married to Movies. John and Tracy will meet you for breakfast tomorrow.